Welcome to Red Carpet Healthcare Solutions, hosted by Dr. Ryan Mauley and Travis Buzzell. Join us on this journey as we educate the patient population, inform today's medical providers, and inspire tomorrow's medical leaders through education and in-depth discussion. We can all discover today's best healthcare solutions. Now, sit back and enjoy Red Carpet Healthcare Solutions, Private Practice Podcasters.
But we can't ignore it anymore. Like you said, one doc per day killing themselves, two times the general population is another stat that I heard. We're beyond that now. We need to talk about this, and we need to talk about it a lot until we can reverse this trend, because we already have a physician shortage, and in the future, we're in big, big trouble. I mean, in the next couple of years, it's going to burst, and maybe it needs to burst. But if we're going to start killing ourselves at this massive rate, like we already are, that's going to accelerate things even further. So it's like, yeah, not talking about it isn't working. It just isn't.
No, I agree. And I think we need to take it to the next level and the, you know, beyond those intimately involved with healthcare, regardless of the role. We need the whole country to be aware of what's going on. And this is just one of many layers of things that need to be addressed in our system, because the dysfunction's top to bottom. You know, the exodus of physicians and nurses and everyone else is unreal at this point. You know, Ryan, I stepped away from direct patient care. I was 46 at the time.
Wow.
46.
That's how old I am right now.
You know, and I loved seeing patients. But in the last 2.5 years, you know, my direct care has been very limited. I do a little bit with the group I work with now, but we can't have 46-year-old physicians walking away, let alone dying by suicide. And I just think that speaks to the level of dysfunction that's been imposed upon all of us. You know, these compressed interactions, this fee-for-service environment, prioritizing profits over people, it's completely out of hand. You know, trying to justify, I won't get into specific names necessarily, but big insurance companies trying to pacify their shareholders rather than taking care of the human beings that they're supposed to be taking care of. That is, what are we doing? Yeah. Like, what are we doing?
Well, I mean, and I'm not sure out your way. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of it that goes on, but I mean, particularly here where we live in Pennsylvania, I mean, you have two huge insurance companies that own health systems. I mean, do you see like a little bit of a conflict of interest there? I mean, it's just like one of those things where it's like, you know, before it, there was independence, right? And that independence created, you know, these partnerships and this kind of coalition, right? Because with numbers, you know, you could, you know, provide more value to these insurance companies and negotiate better and, you know, to do all these sort of things that, quite honestly, and from my perspective, and again, I mean, having been in sort of this world for like the last 15 years, I mean, it helped to create the balance, right? And now it's like, it's so top heavy, one side, insurance companies, health systems, you know, no other autonomy, no sort of like competition or discussion on, you know, pricing, process, all these other things that, to allude to sort of the frustrations you talked about and, you know, how broken the system is, that, you know, what we're talking about is just, I mean, one piece of so many other issues, right? And it's just like, you know, the fear that I have is like, it's gotten so big that, like, how do you stop it? Like, how do you stop the machine? I mean, how do you, overhauling healthcare, like, in its current state, like, it's just like, is it even possible at this point? And, like, you know, to me, that's just like the disheartening conversation, right? And it's like, you know, you really think about it and you look at it, how, you know, even, you know, on the physician side, to your point, it's like we're tying, you know, the volume to the revenue to, it's just like, okay, well, what about the person that needs my help, right? And it might take a little bit longer, but it's like, but in order for me to get to this benchmark, I got to see 60 people today.
Yeah.
It, you know, and it, I don't know. I just, and insurance companies are driving these health systems and vice versa. And it's like, I just don't understand how that became a thing and why anyone thought that that was a good idea. Who wasn't sitting in the C-suite who was benefiting from it. Just, it makes absolutely no sense to me.
Well, I think there are bright spots too. I mean, I agree with everything you're saying. We didn't even get into like PBMs and GPOs and all these other things that opacify the ability for fair competition. Fortunately, there's many out there that are trying to undermine some of those middlemen, if you will. But a bright spot is direct care, direct primary care, direct specialty care. I don't know how familiar the two of you are, but that's basically cutting out the insurance. And for patients, it's significantly cheaper instantaneously, and you get better care because the clinician can spend more time with you. So there are bright spots out there. And I think, but in order for us to get systemic change, some people do actually believe that things just need to implode and we need to rebuild. I think the problem with that is the amount of dead bodies that you're going to have if and when that truly gets to that catastrophic stage will be unfortunate, to say the least. I think the better way to go about it is to have community-oriented pockets of innovation trying to scale things forward. And there's lots of groups out there doing it. It's how do we then take those entities and scale them? And I think that's where loosely connected networks or an impact network, however you want to describe it, where you're sharing information and it's not siloed, will be the key. And then in addition to that, we'll need a lot of numbers and power and voices pushing for legislative changes in the correct direction, not capitulating to lobbyists and keeping things as they are. So I'll get off my soapbox.
Sorry. Yeah, I mean, it's great soapbox though. And I hope it doesn't implode. I have a fear it may, myself personally. My problem with kind of the legislative piece is, like Travis said, I almost feel like it's gotten so far out of control. And with the lack of certain positions having term limits and things like that, like I feel like there's too many politicians in the pockets of big healthcare organizations and insurance companies and things like that, that there's this connection with, you know, massive profits that are being raked in year after year by these massive insurance companies, that I feel like the politics may just not allow it, right? Like we can do our best to go speak to our local legislators, but I hate to say I'm a pessimist, but I don't know how it's going to work.
All of these profits that are being profited by nonprofit organizations.
Yeah.
But these huge, massive buildings we actually just interviewed, I don't know if you're familiar with Wendell Potter. We just interviewed him for the documentary. Oh boy. He was a former, insurance executive for Humana and Cigna that had a crisis of consciousness about 15, maybe 20 years ago, and has been very vocal in speaking out about insurance companies, profits, lobbying, super PACs, all these other things. He's testified to Congress. He was an amazing interview. I'm so excited to get this product out because he can dissect it way more eloquently than I. I'm sort of the troublemaker who is not afraid to open his big mouth and get like people together and so on and so forth. But, you know, there are other people that are entertaining alternative payment models that are out there. Yeah. There's people looking at how other countries are doing things. So there's optimism. I think it'll be interesting. And I'll just give an example, perhaps, you know, of where I hopefully see this going in terms of connecting organizations. So you got all these amazing organizations out there. You know, I can start listing them off: the Lorna Breen Foundation, Doctors for America, Kern National Network. Here, I'll give the plug for the one I'm in, Medicine Forward. And the list goes on and on and on. And then you talk about the state associations or the medical boards. If we can figure out how to loosely connect all these individuals, imagine if one day we get our ducks in a row and we bombard legislators with an end to non-compete clauses, which are beneficial to no one other than those making money. They don't benefit clinicians. They don't benefit patients. But imagine if we send not just a few emails to senators, congressmen, congresspeople, whatever, but thousands or tens of thousands, or all of a sudden one day they get millions of emails about this. That's going to be a little hard to ignore when all your constituents are blasting you these messages repetitively about different problems. And that's just one example of power of numbers I see going forward. But we have to figure out how to get the collective shouting in the same direction. I think when we can solve that puzzle, I think there's hope. There's hope. Yeah. But it's going to take a lot of courage, because we're in a situation of learned helplessness where everyone feels like, I'm only one person. What can I do?
Yeah.
And that's a big problem. Point. It's a big problem.
I kind of want to get into some details about these projects that you're doing, the book.
Sure.
As well as, I think we have to somehow have Jay include that trailer.
Yeah.
Either the link or just incorporate the trailer right into the episode.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest with you, I mean, I'd love to, I mean, first things, you know, I know that you wrote the book and, you know, but the trailer that Dr. Molly sent me, you know, I watched it and like, I was just like,
it's impactful.
Like, it, and in a really good way. It's like, it's a lot. And it's like, it almost kind of felt like I just had like a deja vu moment. 'Cause my wife and I just watched Conclave, the movie with the Pope's election and all that sort of stuff. And so obviously that's going on right now. And it's like, we're having these conversations every day for the last how many months. And it's like, I watch this trailer and I'm like, oh, they're like making a movie about the stuff we've been talking about.
Yeah.
Like in like a very sort of like deja vu sort of way. Like where,
let's do the book first.
Okay.
'Cause I kind of want to do the trailer and the movie.
Okay.
Yeah. After. So where did the book idea come from? Who'd you write it with?
Sure,
what was the inspiration? Sure. And for all the, is it mainly written for patients or physicians or both?
The answer to that, Ryan, is yes. And I'm a big fan of yes. And so initially, the book process started, I wrote a poem called Medicine is a World of Gray. And it was kind of a dark look at primary care and all of the struggles and frustrations that exist as you're trying to see patients in this fee for service hamster wheel, if you will. And then I wrote a chapter called Anatomy of Burnout, which I talked about, which is my journey. And initially, the book was intended to try and bridge the gap between physicians and administrators, right? Because oftentimes there's not just a gap, but often a chasm in terms of what you're trying to accomplish. And I understand both sides, but I've also been in situations where those two entities are on the same page and it's magic. And the amazing part of that is you're never at want for patients, because the culture is good and patients get good care and you're busting at the seams. And oh, by the way, when we were doing that, we were in the black as a little hospital every year.
Yeah.
There's a reason for that. You treated people well. It's not rocket science. Anyways, I digress. The book changed trajectory when one of my former patients got involved, Joshua Judy. I had been caring for Joshua for over a decade at that point, and he had been struggling with cervical radiculopathy. And for those non-physicians, it's a pinched nerve in the neck. And we had tried all kinds of stuff, Ryan. We tried traction, physical therapy. We tried, he got referrals, he got injections. I had taken Cymbalta for my post-concussive headaches and had amazing relief with that. And so I had offered him that, and he had devastating side effects from it. We think it turned off a receptor somewhere to the point where he ended up on testosterone and thyroid medication as a result. And this is all in the book, so there's no HIPAA violations.
Yeah.
But anyways, I was running out of ideas. And so I told him about the project, and he's like, Dr. Otten, I don't even know what the hell the quadruple aim is, but I trust you. And so I'm kind of interested. And he's like, what do you want me to write about? And I said, well, just write. That was the only instructions I gave him. And he did. And it was really good. And it led to a magical meeting that we had. And this book took on a very different trajectory of this yin and yang approach of my mess through burnout. I don't know if you can see that.
Oh, wow.
And then the mess I created for him with the exact same drug.
Can you show the front of that?
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. So
Yeah. So Jay, if you can get a screenshot of that, and he'll put that right up here. Love it. Do you have the audiobook version of that?
I do. It's if you go to Amazon, it's on. It's, and actually Joshua and I read it. And so you get
I like that even better.
You get the mistakes of me screwing things up and, you know, so on and so forth. It is what it is. I'm like, I'm not reading two chapters three times. I'm going to read it once and hopefully it's good enough.
I'll be buying that tomorrow morning and listening. I have about an hour and 15 minute drive one way to my hospital every morning. So,
well, and so, you know, and we wove all these other voices in there. So it's not just Joshua and myself. There's patient voices, medical assistants, CEOs. It's really a kind of a broad look at the mess that's going on, but with a lot of overarching themes for people to take and use as actionable items to make a difference in their little microcosm. And I'll give you an example. Joshua, when I had stepped away, he went and saw a new physician, and he could tell that this physician was harried and in a rush. And he just stopped and said, "How are you doing?" And the whole dynamic changed. The doc stopped typing on the computer, looked up, and it was very different from there on out. And it's those little moments that can make the world of difference for somebody, right? Asking a colleague, "Hey, are you doing okay?" I mean, literally in our environment now, that could actually save somebody's life.
Yeah.
Right. And so the book was not intended to have every solution to our problems. It was intended to be an inspirational story, and there's humor in there. There's stories from me in the Navy in there, and all the shenanigans that occurred during that process. But it was very cathartic for me, for sure.
And then Suck It Up Buttercup, where'd that come from?
That's kind of like taking the book, I suppose, to another level of pulling the curtain back. So in my networking journey, I met a colleague, Marianne Wilbur. She's a gynecologist who stepped away a few years ago, basically from systemic abuses that were going on in her institution. She had a sick child and was like, you know what, I can't do this anymore. And she realized she needed to be a mom. So she stepped away. She wrote a book called The Doctor's No Longer In. We became good friends. She had a dream of making a documentary and then asked me if I was interested from a thought leadership perspective, a networking perspective, but also from an entrepreneurial perspective. And so I said, well, why don't we do an angel investment? And we got that started. And it's just gone on from there. But the reality is, you know, Marianne and I aren't afraid to say what we think. We're not afraid to take a risk. And we realize that the American public deserves to truly know what is going on in our healthcare system, not in some sugar-coated fashion, which is why I think you see a lot of emotion in the trailer, because we went to people who things have really happened to them. You know, their husband, you know, Betsy Gall, for example, her husband died by suicide on Thanksgiving. You know, Wendy Dean's in there. We interviewed Linda Pino, who was a whistleblower on Humana back in the 80s. And she's told me, she's like, my life was ruined when I spoke up against the insurance companies. My life was ruined because she tried to do the right thing. You know, and that's just one example of just a host of people whose lives have either been destroyed or ended by these systemic abuses that ultimately go back to greed, really. And it's so the underlying current of the documentary or theme, if you will, is how greed is negatively impacting things and destroying our system and killing not only clinicians, but patients. But it's not going to be just an airing of grievances, if you will. You know, there's courage that's going to be highlighted in the latter half of the film. There's hope, there's optimism, there's inspiration. And ultimately, there's going to be a very important call to action that I think everyone's going to have the capability to take part in. Obviously, I don't want to give that away just yet.
Yeah, no.
Then no one will watch the documentary, and that defeats the purpose of creating the thing, right?
When is it going to be available?
So we have a screening set up in August of this year that will be a close to being finished product. I would imagine we were hoping to have a soft release on September 17th of this year, which is National Physician Suicide Awareness Day. You know, and the fact that we even need to have a National Physician Suicide Awareness Day speaks volume in and of itself. Yeah. I think the reality of what will happen is we've got a few organizations that we've got some proposals to have some screenings at their big conferences. I think that'll sort of be the soft release. And then ideally what we'd like to see is it picked up by a streaming service, hopefully before the end of the year.
That's what I was going to ask too. Like, is this, where's it going to be available? But you're some type of streaming service.
That's the ultimate plan. Yes.
Okay. Wow.
I can't wait.
How long have you been working on that project?
We started interviewing people in November, so it hasn't been too long. The creative side of the team has got their work cut out for them in the next few months, to be sure. The interesting part of it, though, the appetite for this is unreal. Go ahead.
No, I mean, the appetite. I'm like, people are pissed. I mean, I'm just being like fully transparent. I mean, patients, and to be totally honest with you, I mean, most physicians employed, I mean, a lot of them will tell you like, yeah, I'm not happy. I mean, again, the theme of sort of what we're talking about, but consumers are pissed. My deductible is high. My premiums are high. I'm paying all this money to the insurance company. They don't cover anything. I got to wait 5 months to get an auth for this. You know, by that, it's like people are over it. So like, this is a pain point for a lot of people, and like, this is, yeah, I mean, appetite is probably the best word, but I 100% agree with you because I see it every day with patients. I mean, I'm more not on the, you know, hey, let me help you side. I mean, we are in, you know, in some facets, but letting patients know, yeah, hey, this isn't covered. Hey, no, you know what? Here's the deal. You got, you know, one of these things that is not even remotely close to, you know, you got this ankle brace 3 years ago. It's not a boot for the fractured ankle that you have now, but your insurance company is not going to pay for it. Sorry. You know, like
how long is this documentary? Hour and a half?
We're planning for an hour and a half.
Okay. Perfect. Yeah. I mean, I'm a project guy. I love doing things. I'm very, so very cool. Creative. I love building things, either physically with my hands or programs and things like that. And I will definitely write a book at some point in my career. Like when you're creating a documentary though, like, are you the director? You're probably not the director. Are you the producer? Are you the idea guy? Like, how are you finding people to get this all set up?
A wonderful, wonderful thought process there. You know, Ryan, my title is executive producer, and some of my key roles for this, it's multifaceted for me. The way that we are, generating capital for this is actually in a grassroots fashion. And I'll put a plug in. If any of our colleagues are interested in participating until we fill out the budget, find me on LinkedIn and we'll talk about it. But there's some power in that, right? We've got about 60, 65 individuals and or organizations who have contributed in some fashion for this. And so that's been a big part of my role to this point, or one of my big parts. The other part for me
like is fundraising.
Yeah, so fundraising has been a big part. But the other part is the story arc and helping the director, John, and Scott and Amy understand better all these issues that are going on. Perhaps one of the biggest roles for me is getting the right voice to fill a void in the story. And that's where it's almost been like doors are just opening up at this point, because I think everybody realizes like, this project is bigger than any one person that's involved. This project is for all of us. And so literally, you know, Wendell Potter, I mean, just as an example, he's a big name in the thought leadership space, particularly in the insurance world, the contrarian against the insurance companies, if you will. Literally, I messaged him on his company, I think a week and a half ago. And within hours, I got a response from his assistant directly contacting me to him. That's just magic right there. Wow. You know, and that's just one of many. We're supposed to be interviewing the former Surgeon General coming up, and the list goes on and on and on. But I think that speaks to people are ready to move in a different direction. And we need something big out there saying it's okay. It's okay. Let's push some of these other things aside and, you know, pick X or Y or Z. So yeah, multifaceted. Hopefully that answered your question.
Right? Yeah, I mean, I'm just, again, love the details behind projects like this. Like, are you contributing to, like, Are they giving you different scores of music that's going, like when I watched your trailer, like the music was great because it was just like very intense and it made you like, you're like sitting on the edge of your seat listening to these people being interviewed. And I mean, it kind of gives me chills just now thinking about it, like the opening scene with Wendy. And then I can't remember the lady that you had mentioned where her husband committed suicide.
Betsy.
And she literally said, like, being a doctor killed my husband. And I'm just like, oh my God. Like the pain. I'm an empath. So I naturally kind of feel other people's pains. And I felt her pain when she was saying that. And I'm watching her say that. And, you know, when we were talking about your burnout and my burnout that I went through last year, my life coach, who I started talking to about 5 years ago now, she came up with a term that I had never heard before, but it's 100% what was going on was compassion fatigue, right? Mm-hmm. Like as physicians, we are kind of expected to be compassionate, empathetic to our patients. And I am, but I got to a point last year, I was just like, just I don't have it in me anymore. And I've rediscovered it, thankfully, but there was a period where it was just like, it was a chore to go in there every day and to listen to people. I'm just like, what's this person gonna complain about? And what's this person gonna complain about? And it just trying to solve everybody's problems, it just felt so exhausting.
I agree with you. I know exactly how you feel. And patients would pick up on that, you know, especially, you know, as a family physician, you have longitudinal relationships with people, right? Like I knew people for over 10 years and, you know, we would talk about our kids and family and, you know, some of them became family, some of them became friends over time. You know, even Joshua, my co-author, he in retrospect looked back at the period where I was burned out and he's like, you were not yourself. He's like, you were cold, you were callous, you know, you were cavalier at times. He said it was a departure from the doc I had known for many, many years. And so that I had totally appreciate compassion fatigue. I had that for months on end. It was a dread going into work.
Do you miss dread. Clinical practice and medicine?
I do. You know, I do a little bit currently. We were calling it complex disease management for a while, but it's really more of a extended second opinion. So individuals can come see me. I'll spend an hour, hour and a half with them and tell them exactly what I think is going on and send them out with a written plan. And so that's filled that up a little bit, but I'll say this, you know, I think the work that I'm doing and others are doing, talking about these things and working on these other projects are going to be as impactful, if not more impactful than I was when I was seeing patients. And so that fills up my cup every day. I'm having conversations with our colleagues around the country and trying to coordinate things. And sometimes it's just the simplest of things, making a connection for somebody else. It's not the same, but it's definitely rewarding. And I can see, you know, I can see some potentially big impact down the road. And so
I think you're already having it. Yeah, and I mean, personally, I thank you for what you're doing and I applaud you for the courage that it must have taken you to kind of step outside of what you kind of trained so long and so hard for. I mean, cause we put so much into this, right? Mm-hmm. And to think about stepping away from the stethoscope. Now, granted, I'm an orthopedic surgeon. I don't even know what one of those is, but you know what I'm getting at, right? And to put a different hat on, again, I think it takes a lot of courage and it's exactly probably where, I'm not trying to get spiritual, but like where you're supposed to be right now. It's just my gut instinct. It's like you're doing the work that you're supposed to be doing for the people that need it the most right now, which is, you know, your colleagues.
Ryan, I thank you. I appreciate those comments so much. And it's interesting you say that because there's moments of self-doubt. There's the moments of that imposter syndrome. Like, you know, if you told me 10 years ago, I'd be an executive producer working on a documentary, I'd be telling you you're crazy. you know, I don't know anything about that, but I think the reality is we are being guided through this process. Every time I think a door is closing, literally another one opens up, and it's often a bigger door with more opportunity for and for more exposure. And so I agree with you, and I've just kind of given myself over to the process a little bit, to be honest with you, like just letting God take me where I'm supposed to be going, and that's okay.
Yeah. Love it.
Being an agent of change is not for the weak and the weary, and I cannot wait to see it. So,
yeah, I mean, it just sometimes we're creatures of science, right? Physicians, and it's a science, it's a science, it's a science. I have a tendency to say, especially what I do, is as much a science as it is an art, the surgical side of things. But then I just think medicine in general is an art, right? There's so many things that we've learned and that you and I have learned from being in practice for over a decade, 15 years, that you don't learn in your med school classroom. You don't learn in your residency or your fellowship. And the things that you're doing now, again, could not thank you more for it, because this is, I think we're in a critical stage right now. And I think patients will be thanking you because you're going to hopefully help turn this pendulum the other direction and allow change to start to occur. I mean, that's one of the main reasons that we do this podcast. I mean, I'm a staunch private practice supporter. I've been in private practice for all but 2 years of my career. When I was in Michigan, I was employed for 2 years, and then I started my own private practice, orthopedic practice, in 2018. So that wasn't an easy thing to do. I didn't have any business degree. I had no business background. I never took one business course or class, and I knew I wanted to create the ultimate patient experience, and I didn't like how the system was forcing things to go a certain direction and volume over everything else. And I still am a very, very high volume orthopedic total joint surgeon. But to me, there's so much more that goes into that patient's care and their outcomes and their satisfaction than how well I put the implants in them. And I mean, we're focusing so much now on medical optimization, both before and after surgery. We're looking at, my practice's name is Whole Health, right? It's all about the entirety of that human individual. Like, I was put on this planet to do a lot more than put metal and plastic in people. And I'm not being cocky or arrogant, I'm really good at that. But I think my heart and my mind and my soul is really here to impact those people's lives a lot more by helping them understand that chronic disease is not normal, right? This is something that our society has kind of created and we're accepting it as normal, but we can reverse those trends. And if we can reverse those trends of chronic disease, whether it's obesity or diabetes or malnutrition or whatever it may be, that person's psyche is going to be better. Their relationships with their loved ones is going to be better. And again, I think this is just another big piece of the healthcare crisis is I don't think it's accidental. I mean, the pharmaceutical industry is a great example of this, where I don't believe that the pharmaceutical industry and some other big organizations truly want patients to be well, quote unquote, well, right? Because they profit off of, you know, whether it's prescriptions every month or just chronic disease.
Yeah, I mean, if everybody loses weight and eats better, the sales of GLP-1s are a tank. Exactly. Sorry, I couldn't resist. But there's some truth to that. I mean, you know, 100%. There's people that are thriving financially in the sick care system that we exist in. Yeah. You know, the system is doing exactly what it was intended to do. Generate profits.
A good buddy of mine, he's an orthopedic surgeon that I think you would, you know, get along with well and have some interesting conversations with. His name's Blake Miller. He's 3 or 4 years below me in training. I was his senior resident, but he's in Michigan And he is still an orthopedic surgeon, but he's actually now a functional medicine physician. And he's kind of transitioning his career more towards that and focusing on a lot of the things that I just kind of mentioned. And he is wicked smart with that kind of stuff. I mean, wicked smart with biochemistry and all that. And just the fact that he experienced burnout as well. And as a trauma surgeon too, you can imagine, right? It's just not a great recipe for family life. And when you're young and you come out of residency, you're like, oh yeah, I just want to operate. I want to operate. And then you realize that you're not seeing your wife, you're not seeing your kids. And it was like a lifestyle reset for him. And I'm just so happy and proud of him. Like, he's a great writer too. I mean, if you see him on LinkedIn or Facebook, he has a very, very interesting functional medicine practice, and maybe somebody you want to even, you know, talk to or interview for your documentary.
For sure. I'm writing my notes here to the side of individuals and things I need to do. Yeah. It seems to keep growing though.
Yeah. And I'm sure it's difficult too, because you only have so much time, right? Like an hour and a half, you got to try to squeeze all this content in.
Yeah. Well, and that's an interesting comment though. We're starting to realize that if this does what we think it can do, that there's potentially opportunities for subsequent projects that are more targeted, you know, whether it's for academic institutions or purely for clinicians or perhaps purely for patients and that kind of thing. So we're seeing longitudinal opportunities related to this if successful.
Keep me in mind. I love 100%, doing this kind of stuff. So
100%, 100%. We could go down a lot more rabbit holes here.
Yeah. Well, I just want to thank you for taking time. I know you're a busy guy working on all these projects, and it's really, really inspiring to me to see a physician being willing to kind of step out of the ring. But yeah, I think you're stepping into a much more impactful ring that has far more downstream positive, possibilities than you treating individual patients. That's just my perspective, but
yeah, no, I can't thank you enough for your time and just, yeah, I mean, just how impactful some of the stuff that you're doing and the documentary and the book. And I just think the general, the shift in kind of the ideology of what we're doing in healthcare is, it's needed, and there needs to be, advocates and, people like you that, like I heard you say a couple times, like, I'm not afraid to stand up and say, kind of what I'm thinking and what I believe in. And I think we need more people like that. So thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. I appreciate you guys having me. This has been an absolute blast. And keep talking about those uncomfortable things, because there's power in numbers and there's power in solidarity, for sure.
For sure. So all our guests out there, right?
Yeah.
Hit that like button. Hit that subscribe button. Share this with your friends, your colleagues, and leave comments, right? If you have somebody that you think would be a great guest, somebody you want to see us interview, that's how a lot of this happens. I mean, Marty Nichols was the guy that...
Yeah. Marty Nichols, I think, is 2 for 2 or 3 for 3. I don't know, man. He's sent a couple folks.
Honestly, I was thinking the other day that we need to reach out to all of our previous guests. I'm going to do it for both the podcasts, this one and the Hey Sawbones one, and just say, hey, give me 3 names of people that you think would be great guests on this podcast. And because after a while you're like who should I get, I get. So
and then also if Jay could send a link here, put a link here for the book, and then also for the trailer, I'd love for anyone out there that obviously got to listen to this, please take a look. We obviously both have done have seen the trailer and obviously had this conversation. I think that it's going to be big.
I guess one last thing, Dr. Otten, if someone wants to follow you or get in touch with you, how would they do that?
Sure. Probably the best way to get in touch with me is via LinkedIn. I'm very active on that profile, Todd R. Otten, pretty easy to find. And then my personal website is rippleofchange.us. I'm the lead catalyst for medicineforward.org. And then the documentary is suckitupbuttercupfilm.com.
One final question. Who came up with the name?
It was the creatives, and they were pretty adamant that that was the direction we wanted to go. But it kept coming up over and over again in the interviews. I even said it one time in the interviews, and so that's where we've landed. And I think people either understand it if they're in the healthcare space, or they're intrigued by it enough to say, huh, suck it up, buttercup, trust and betrayal in American medicine. What is that about? So yeah, I give credit to John, Scott, and Amy at this point.
Yeah, no, it's a great title. So I want to thank everybody for tuning in. We'll catch you on the flip side.
Thanks, everyone.
As a disclaimer, this podcast is for general informational purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other professional healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice. No doctor-patient relationship is formed. The use of this information and the materials linked to this podcast is at the user's own risk. The content on this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Users should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice from any medical condition they have, and they should seek the assistance of their healthcare professional from any such conditions.